Proverbs is unlike the book of Ecclesiastes. Proverbs tends to be a book that does not try to answer a question of how you deal with people who are wicked, who seem to be prospering. Proverbs, on the other hand, just kind of says if you serve God, you're going to be blessed. And there's a lot of value in just recognizing what the book of Proverbs says. I located a study that was done by a man by the name of Immel, and it is a series of articles that he published in Truth Magazine, 13 weeks in all. So I'm giving you an article a week. There's one on the board back there and or on the lectern back there, and Ron will be teaching next week, and he'll be doing the one that's on the lectern back there. But today, we're just going to kind of set the stage for the book of Proverbs, a little bit of an introduction. And if you're interested, you can look those articles up. You can have them online if you would like. You do have to subscribe to the magazine in order to search the archives, though, and that's a yearly subscription, and it's a fairly expensive yearly subscription. So I'll be sure that I get those to you, and you'll be able to follow along with us. If I had to pick a theme for the book of Proverbs, it would probably be this in Proverbs 1 at verse 7. Now, this is the way it reads in the American Standard Translation. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge. The foolish despise wisdom and instruction. And there's some sense in which I think we gain a lot by looking at different translations. The one that I think kind of captures the essence of this statement is the Contemporary English Version. The Contemporary English Version in Proverbs 1 at verse 7 reads this way: respect and obey the Lord. This is the beginning of knowledge. Only a fool rejects wisdom and good advice. Let's think about that for a minute. The fear of the Lord. When I say fear, when I say fear God, what do you generally think about?
Respect.
Respect. Thank you.
Obedience.
Obedience.
Judgment.
Okay, judgment. Let me fix my hearing aids here. Change settings, turn things up. Sorry about that. I meant to do that before we got started. Can you say that again?
Hearing the word is waiting.
Okay. I think it's interesting that nobody said that when they think about fear of God, that you cower before God, that you're just afraid of God in the sense in which we use that word afraid. Yeah, I went out walking Tilly last night, and I was going around the park that's just down the street from us, and there was a sound off in the bushes and a big growl. And I'll tell you, my heart leaped, my stomach was in my throat, and I thought I'm about to be eaten. And my first thought was, it's a grizzly. It was not a grizzly, but it was a really big dog. And if his owner hadn't been there, I'm sure that dog could have eaten me alive. That's what I think of when I think of fear. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Fear God. And, you know, among the ancients, when they went to worship God, they always covered their head. They would wear like a hoodie. No, it wasn't a hoodie, but it was kind of like a hoodie. And they would cover their head so that they could cover their neck, because they were convinced that God at any moment could reach down and just eliminate them. They were afraid. And I don't think that's the posture. I don't think that's the kind of attitude that leads to knowledge. It just leads to fear. It leads to running away. If I fear God, I run away from him. So I think you guys came up with some pretty good synonyms for the word fear. Let's just look at some others. And again, I was reading from the Contemporary English Version, but you get the same impression if you read from the King James Translation or the American Standard or New International or any of the different translations that we typically use. Somebody read Hebrews 12 at verse 13.
And make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is impaired cannot be dislocated, but rather be healed.
Okay. How about 1 John 4 at verse 18? Then we'll get some comments.
Such love has no fear, because perfect love is self-confident. If they are afraid, it is the fear of punishment. And this shows that we have fully experienced perfect love.
Okay. I think this is talking about awe. Any other comments about these passages that we've read that use this same concept? Yeah, Carol.
That last just reminded me of what I was thinking about earlier, and that is when the parable of the talent is given, the one who was given the one talent feared God and buried. He didn't know God that well, and he only knew that God was powerful. He didn't know the love of God. He showed him the respect because he knew that, but he didn't know God in any way but the wrong kind of fear.
Yeah, he said, I know you. You're a hard man. You reap where you've not sowed. And so I went and hid your talent in the earth so I wouldn't lose it. I guess. I can't figure out any other reason for burying it. I didn't want to lose it, and I was so afraid that you were going to strike me down if I lost it. Other comments? Anybody at home? Feel free, just chime in. And if we understand that love casts out fear, we're not going to run away from God like I was ready to run away from the grizzly that was going to attack me while I was walking my poor little dog. I was ready to sacrifice Tilly. You can have her, but I'm running away. That's not the way that we want to be with God. Can I get somebody to read Psalms 115, verse 11? Yeah, Carol. Go ahead.
You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield.
Okay. Comments. What do you see here? I had a friend who was a member of the Mounted Posse in Southern California. And they, of course, used their horses to control big crowds of people. And partly they used their horses because they're just big enough that they make it easy to control people. But he said something really important about the relationship that he has with his horse. You think about it. I'm not a horseman. I don't know everything I know about horses. You could write on the head of a pin, but I'm guessing that big an animal is not going to do what you tell it to do unless there's a trust relationship between you and that animal. I don't think you could be so big and bad that you could make that horse do what you wanted it to do. Am I right? Any horsemen here? You don't walk into the horse's stall and immediately strike fear into that horse. But the horse trusts you. Even though it's bigger than you, the horse trusts you not to put it in harm's way. And the horses will do amazing things, but it's because of trust, not because of fear. I don't think you can strike fear into the heart of that animal. Now, you beat it with a stick, I suppose. But somehow I don't think I don't think Sharon would have been able to get her horse to do what she wanted her horse to do if she had relied on beating it. And I don't know Sharon. I've never seen Sharon interact with her horse, but I don't think she beat it. I mean, when the poor thing had trouble and fell on Sharon, Sharon didn't beat it to get off of her. It was a trust relationship. So I think awe begets trust, not running away. Awe is all throughout our worship. And it's more than you dress up when you go to church. That never impressed me as being awe and respect. That there's something more to the awe that we feel when we worship. Somebody read Psalms 5, verse 7. This is David.
But as for me, by your abundant loving kindness, I will enter your house. At your holy temple, I will bow in reverence.
Okay. There's something that, well, how would you describe it? When you worship God, what does awe mean in terms of reverence?
Humility.
Okay. Yeah, Faye.
Thankfulness.
Okay. That's a good word. Mark?
So I think there's two words for me. It is one is respect, and the other is a willing acknowledgement. I guess the example that I would give is one of my sons-in-law, Evan, years ago, I felt like, yeah, I could take you if I needed to. But now, there's no way that I can take him. I respect that, and I acknowledge the fact that he is way better at those kind of things than I am. And it's, in a way, it's kind of changed how I think and feel about him in a very good way. but I fully acknowledge and I fully respect what he's capable of. And how that equates to God is, I fully acknowledge and I fully respect what he is capable of. And for me, the motivation is love, and that motivation of that fear and that acknowledgement also, you know, helps me to want to do better and it keeps me in line. Because I know what can happen if I don't, just like with my son-in-law, if I am careless with how I think, I know he'll put me on my back.
Yeah. Yeah, you would never attack his wife.
For a number of reasons that is true.
You would never attack his wife because you know
yes.
he will respond.
Yes.
And there's an awe when we come into worship. Don't make a promise to God unless you mean it. Yeah, Carol.
This is one of the hardest things that I have to feel like I'm being successful with the reverence to God. His greatness is so great. I just can't wrap my brain around it. And because I can't wrap my brain around it, I feel like I'm not giving him the kind of reverence that he needs.
Okay. Good point. Anybody else?
Kind of reminds me of the smallness of myself in comparison.
Okay. Smallness of yourself in comparison to God. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Smallness even in terms of creation. Yeah. And I've been doing a lot of studying in Hebrews, getting ready to teach the class with Ted on Wednesday night. And there is this phrase, what's man that you're mindful of him? Why would you send Jesus to die for man? I mean, maybe I deserved, maybe I'm enough that I deserve a minor angel, but I deserved God. And I think about who I am, and like Carol said, it's hard for me to come into the presence of God and understand the difference in my value and God's value, and think that God sent his son to die for me. That's an amazing statement. Other comments? Well, last thing about fear. Fear is related to, in many ways, being accepted by God. Now, it's the beginning of wisdom. That's knowing where we stand and kind of respecting God. But it's related to God accepting us and being willing to give us instruction and give us knowledge. You've all in one way or another been in a position where you had to apply for some position. You had to apply for a job, or maybe you had to apply to get into nursing school. And you have to be accepted into nursing school or into graduate school before they'll give you the instruction. So being accepted is a big part of how we learn. Because God's not going to give his instruction to just anybody. He's not going to waste his time on people that don't care about his instruction. And I think that's an important concept. But can somebody read Romans 3 at verse 8? To get somebody at home to read that. Carolyn, I'll pick on you because I know you're following along in your Bible. Can you read Romans 3 at verse 8?
And why not say, let us do evil that good may come, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say that condemnation is just. My glasses aren't working too well this morning.
It's okay. Somebody read Acts 10, verse 34 and 35. This is something that Peter said to Cornelius.
Opening his mouth, Peter said, I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation, the man who fears him does what is right is welcome to it.
Okay. So it's when we talk about being accepted, right, you've applied to a job and there's this fear that you're not going to get the job. Okay. With God, it doesn't work that way. If you apply to the job and you have this respect for him, he will accept you. There's no question about it. But you can't expect to be accepted by God if you don't live the way that God expects you to live. That's just a fact of life. So it's important to understand how fear of God is the beginning of wisdom and the beginning of knowledge. It's interesting, he says it's the beginning of knowledge. There are different ways to translate that idea of beginning. Does anybody have a marginal note in their Bible for that word beginning that says it's the principal part? You'll see that in some translations. The fear of God is the principal part of knowledge. It's what everything hinges on. And then there's also a very real sense in which it's the place where you begin. It's the starting point. So I think both of those things are probably true. Comments as to the beginning of knowledge? Yeah, Carol.
Well, I don't know how much it's quite that, but I was thinking, made me think of a little child standing on the really close to the edge of a cliff. And if the person who's talking to him is a jokester and says, come here, he may just jump backwards because he's a fool. He doesn't believe what you're saying. And there are other instances like that, but if you believe your father has got words of wisdom and he says, come here right now, I need you, you're going to do that, and it's the beginning of a new life to save you from death.
Okay. It's the principal part. Good point. By the way, if you can figure out how to get my dog to come and not run away from me into traffic, then yeah, that's the beginning of wisdom. And Ron, I know Ron's dog won't come either. they come when they want to. but they don't always come. And if you're not going to, if you don't get that first, then it, a lot of things are not going to work. So let's kind of conclude. We've taken the awe, the person that has awe for God, respect for God. It's the beginning of knowledge. And then that's contrasted with the foolish man. The contemporary English version, remember what it says? Only a fool rejects wisdom and good advice. Well, fool can have a lot of different meanings. It has so many shades of meaning that you have to be careful when you use that word, because I may call somebody a fool and not be terribly insulting about it. I might be saying that they're thick-headed, and they think I'm saying that they're wicked. I might be saying that they're a person who boasts, who makes a show, and they think, oh, you're telling me I'm silly. Fool is one of those words you have to be really careful with, because it has these different meanings. So let's just look at some of these different meanings real quickly. In Psalm 75 at verse 4, can somebody read that? And this, again, this is the concept of the fool. Okay. So in this case, the fool is the one who boasts. I know what's gonna happen tomorrow. How does James put it? You who say tomorrow we're gonna buy and sell and get great gain. He says, be careful. You don't know what tomorrow holds. And I've always felt that way. Two things that never lose value: real estate, right? And land. So you buy real estate and land. It's the best investment that you could ever have. I bought my house in Alaska, and after just about 6 months, it was worth half what I paid for it. You boast about things that you're sure of and you're not. So that's the foolish man. Don't be like that. Don't be a silly person. Proverbs 1 verses 22 and 32. You get the impression that some people just never think about anything that matters. They never have a serious discussion about anything. And you've probably been around people like that. I don't like to be around people like that. I want to have a serious discussion about things. And I really do want to look at the hard things. And sometimes people just don't. You try to have a conversation with them and they make faces at you. That's really frustrating. They make a joke about everything. This is a fool. Proverbs 17 at verse 7. A fool is in this place is equated with someone who is a wicked person. And that seems to be just an association. I don't think that fool means that they're necessarily wicked, because I don't think every silly person who doesn't have serious conversations about something is a wicked person. That those seem to be two different things, at least as I understand. But finally, Ecclesiastes, we just finished studying Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes presents the fool as a person who's thick-headed, who just will not listen to reason. That's a foolish person. And that person is not going to benefit a great deal from the book of Proverbs. So as we study Proverbs, what you're going to find is it seems to be a book that just strings together statements that don't have any relationship to the statement that went before. So it's in some ways, we're not going to find an overarching organization to the book of Proverbs. It just seems to be pithy short statements. And if you think that those things are easy to come up with, try coming up with one. It's not like a meme. Although that's the way sometimes we approach the book of Proverbs. So we're going to talk about that. Ron will be teaching next week. Any other comments or thoughts before we close? Yeah, Carol.
Well, Proverbs 17, verse 7, the wicked person, since the fool doesn't listen to God, he listens to the wicked, and he can become a very wicked person in his foolishness. And right. So I think that's what happens, is that it's because he doesn't listen to God, he can become a foolish person.
Yeah. You gotta think about who you listen to. And you know, it's some people are just not worth a hearing. I tend to listen to pretty much everybody and at least evaluate what they say. And I'll tell you, quite frankly, sometimes I listen to people, and after I listen to them for a while, I determine that they're not saying things that are worthwhile. They don't deserve the hearing that I would give to somebody that does say things that are worthwhile.
I remember one of my favorites, in Ecclesiastes chapter in the beginning, talks about the wise man's heart leans to the right, but the foolish man's heart leans to the left.
Yeah, that's a political statement. Sorry.
Yes, sir.
That just slipped out. My wife says I need to learn to control my tongue, and sometimes that slips out. Sorry about that. Oh, my. If you only knew the things that are going on behind my eyeballs, you would be shocked. Yeah.
But it seems to me that foolishness lies lying under ignorance, moving inward, and fear is really self-preservation. So I think that to achieve awe, it's not necessarily how you would awe or at awe. It's like, oh, I'm so humble, it's so small. It's not about, I think, really having awe. It's just simply being able to open yourself up and really envelop yourself in what you're learning and what God is without trying to think of how you care about.
Yeah.
That leads to foolishness. I think it leads to self-preservation.
Yeah. Excellent statement. With Amelia's statement, we will consider this class finished.